Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 94 of Slamfire Radio for February 6th, 2015. I'm one of your hosts, Matthew the Warning Shot McClatchy. Joining me this week is...
Trevor the Frelate Ron Burgundy.
Close enough. And...
And Owen, I'm not as sick as I used to be flailing.
Well, that's good. And we're happy that you're not as sick as you used to be.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk anymore, though. I'm still just going to be...
Well, thanks for joining us. In your absence, I suppose, we could have, like, a special guest on or something. You know who we should get? We should get that guy off that Doc Weston show. Who's that guy? Paul something? Blade guy? There he is. I hear him.
Live and in person, boys.
Here's Paul Carlson. Welcome to the show, Paul. How you doing?
Hey, it's pretty good here across the border. How are you guys doing?
Cold?
Cold,
yeah. I bet.
Mostly cold, yeah.
Single digits here, so I mean, it's got to be, just balmy where you're at in comparison.
Quite. Yeah. Single digits in Fahrenheit.
We're in double digits
Yeah,
here.
We are in double digits, really. Minus double digits. To be fair, there is a conversion factor there to factor in, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you know,
still pretty cold.
That.
So, Paul, before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and where you're coming from?
Yeah, right on. I'm the owner of Safety Solutions Academy. We're an organization that works to try and help folks lead safer lives. We've really started to niche in towards defensive firearms training and product development and those kinds of things, and have a podcast, Safety Solutions Academy podcast, which you can check. And also, I've now become a regular host on the Gun Nation podcast. I think when I jump off with you guys tonight, we'll be jumping on there. I've got another recording tonight, so it'll be a fun podcasting night. That's kind of my life.
So it's nothing but recording for you tonight, then?
Yeah, pretty much, man. My wife has been running beverages down here to the studio, and I appreciate that.
Well, we'll try to wear your voice out tonight. So you're great on our show, but you suck on the other one.
Perfect. That's exactly what Doc would want.
He would, really. I mean, he wants you to give your all to us Canadians up here.
And I will do that.
He's already throwing Owen under the bus on Facebook.
He really did, by unintentionally and by omission, really. But
right, exactly. I kind of noticed that. It was hurtful.
Yeah, Owen noticed too. He called me up crying a little bit. So
yeah. So Doc, by the way, there are three of us.
Yeah, Doc. Oh well. So Paul, we usually start off the show with what we've done with guns in a week. So you're our guest. Why don't you start us off? What have you done with guns this week?
Right on. Started out the week outside teaching an Ohio concealed carry class.
Outside.
Yeah. I have a really hard time getting ranges here in the area that will allow me to actually teach defensive shooting. They love for people to come and teach target shooting, you know, which is all cool and fun.
Well, you're doing target shooting. It's just that your targets move a little bit, and sometimes they fight back.
And want to kill you, right?
Right.
Exactly. So it's kind of a different deal. And so I require all my students to go through a session of drawing from the holster before I say, hey, yeah, you're good to go for a concealed carry permit. So, you know, this range that's outside, they let us do that. So that's where we train. So we had, you know, like 18 inches of snow, and I don't know, it started out at, you know, 7 degrees, and we had a great time.
Guys, so you start off with the students going prone then?
Yeah, absolutely. We start out with snow tunnels.
Right.
There we go. And belly crawl, and then, you know, pop up when you need to, like a little groundhog. It's a cool little technique that I've come up with. Yeah.
It's a good technique. I'd like to see video of this on YouTube.
Yeah, we'll get that up.
Right.
I think Tex Grubner actually probably will get that up before I do, but, you know, you can check that out. So that's how the week started, and we've just been cruising along, working really hard, trying to get information out about our Plan B, which is a new base pad system we developed for the Smith & Wesson Shield, which unfortunately for you guys, as you kind of educated me in pre-show, is probably not a huge product for our Canadian listeners because of the barrel length limitation you guys have.
Well, if you can convince Smith & Wesson to make a 106-millimeter barrel for that, then
yeah, right on. What's going to probably happen that's more likely than that is this product, basically any gun that uses a magazine sleeve to put a longer magazine than the grip standard would be. So say you have, I'll try and think of an example that would work for you guys. Glock 19, you can get barrels from Lone Wolf, you said, for Glock 19s, right?
Yep.
Okay, so if you put a Glock 17 magazine in a Glock 19, the magazine works, but there's extra length.
That's right.
That's a cosmetic issue with a Glock, but with other guns, it's actually a functional issue, like the Shield. And so if you take the sleeve off that comes on a Smith & Wesson Shield and you over-insert that magazine, same deal on a 1911, 10-round magazine into a 1911, you can over-insert that magazine and bend or break the ejector.
Oh.
And that's a problem. So we've had students that have started doing that in classes. We developed this product, the Plan B, and the whole idea is to lock that that sleeve in place with the base pad so that it won't slide up and so that people aren't tempted to want to take it off. And that way you can't over-insert.
So does the Shield, it takes the M&P magazine then? Is that the mag that they're using?
Yeah, the Shield comes with two different magazines, which is kind of a cool concept from the factory. It comes with a flush-fit 7-round 9mm magazine, and then it has an 8-round that has this sleeve that just slides up and down and gets in the way and keeps
right.
you from being able to drop the magazine.
Yep.
And that's the part that we redesigned, is we took that and made it in a way that would cost Smith & Wesson $0 more to make.
Right.
Basically, we just turned it into a Lego setup and clipped them together. I mean, it's really simple.
So it just attaches sort of to the base plate kind of thing then? So
yeah.
It just stays like right where it's supposed to be.
A little tongue and groove. You know, you slide the sleeve down, base pad goes backwards onto the magazine like everything else does, you know, slides onto the magazine, clicks in place, and boom, that sleeve can't move anymore. So it's pretty cool.
Paul?
Yeah?
If you can fix the M&P Shield, why can't you fix the AR-51?
Well, we're actually going to try to do that. And what we got to do that
Segway.
At the range outside, we have this blast furnace that we use to burn all the target materials.
Right.
So we figure if we can collect all the R51s from Remington and throw them into that blast furnace, that should fix the problem.
That should fix it. You're right.
Well, what about you're going to keep the Pelican cases, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Those Pelican cases would be perfect to put, you know, a real gun in. So.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Are you familiar with the term cynic?
Yeah, right. Yeah, pretty much. That's my middle name, Cynic.
They did it to you, though. They created this monster.
It's a shame, isn't it, guys?
Like, it's a really neat-looking gun. I like the look of it.
No, I don't even like the look of it.
Well, you don't count then. Carry on.
You know, I don't care about the look of it. You know, I'm a utilitarian type guy when it comes to guns these days. I used to be really into looks and all that kind of stuff. I just want guns that work. And I had such high hopes. And
well, they based it on a gun that they had built, you know, back a ways.
Yeah,
and that was a well-functioning gun as I understood it. And it uses a unique locking system.
Yeah. That Pedersen block is different. And
yeah.
there's some folks that are questioning whether or not that block has the ability to deal with the pressures of the 9mm cartridge. You know, that gun was originally chambered, if I remember correctly, in 380 and 32 ACP.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And, you know, those are like, you know, two-thirds of the power of a 9mm from a pressure standpoint.
Yep.
That's a big difference. And that steel block beds into an aluminum frame.
Yeah. Yeah. Mating aluminum and steel together, especially with high pressure scenarios, is not always the best idea.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But I mean, they do have some pretty high paid engineers. You'd think they would have gotten the math right on that. I think the issue, as I understood it, was a quality control, like a stacking issue in the quality control, where they make a bunch of parts, just made a bunch of them, and they're all within tolerances. But when you get one that's on the, you know, extreme left of the tolerance scale and one that's on the extreme right, then it wasn't working. So
yeah, it's kind of like getting a lower without all the holes in it. You know, it just happens sometimes. And, you know, that's one of the stories that I was told, guys, was, oh, this is a tolerance issue, and we've dealt with that. But the problem that I have is that's one of the things I was told. I was told 10 different things right. about why this isn't happening. And what bothers me most is now they're waiting to move factories before they begin production again. And how many thousands of people do you have out there that have ponied up their, you know, $300-$400 for a gun and don't have that gun?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's not cool. That does suck.
No. So coming back to your product, Paul.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are numbers looking like? I know it's still early, but how are sales rolling in?
Insane.
And what do you expect? Hey, oh, good.
Insane, Trevor. Basically, I set things up, and what I want to do is number one, we started out just like Remington did. So this has got me scared, you know?
What, you made sure something that doesn't work?
No.
You didn't test it first?
That was hurtful. We tested a pre-production part. And then now we're moving to the production phase. And that's where supposedly Remington had their problems, was moving to production. So what I did is I set up a limited run of the first plan B. That way, if we have any kind of a difficulty, if there's any kind of a challenge, you know, we've got a limited number of people that we have to deal with to rectify that. Mm-hmm. So I put on sale, oh boy, the Monday after SHOT Show, 150 plan Bs, and those are sold out. They're gone. So those base pads were gone in under a week, and I should have the first production parts in hand tomorrow to begin testing. And if those work out the way that they should, we will start running them hardcore, and we'll be shipping the first week of March. That's our goal.
Very nice.
So, and those that, you know, again, this isn't necessarily a big Canadian product, but I know you guys have listeners on both sides of the border.
We do, we do.
If folks are interested, what I meant to say is you guys are international.
There you go.
International. If you head to safetysolutionsacademy.com/plan B, there's a list you can sign up for, an email list. It will send you updates, let you know what's going on. We won't inundate you with a bunch of crap, but we'll let you know about the plan B and what's happening. So you can check that out. And my hope is that in April, we're going to have another run ready to go on sale with some minor tweaks when we get feedback from our customers. So that's what I'm fired up about.
Outstanding.
Yeah, I hope
so. I concur.
See what I did there?
Yeah, you did. You made fun of me. Come on, man. I'm like, yes, you're supposed to leave me alone. First the nice thing, now outstanding.
It's a good thing, right? It is what it is.
Awesome.
Oh, that's funny. He just nailed Ken.
All right. Before we insult every single podcaster that we know, why don't we move on to Owen? What did you do with guns this week?
Didn't do really much of anything. I did a holster review on the G-Code Incog holster. That was it. Did I put that on YouTube? No, I haven't put it on YouTube yet. I'm going to put it on YouTube next week.
So you've got a video that no one can see yet?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So, but by the time they hear the show, they should be able to hear it, right?
No.
Oh. But if they're listening to repeats 3 years from now, they should be able to. So if they were listening in 3 years' time, where can they go to see your video?
They can go to my YouTube channel, which
is
probably the easiest way to get to that is
through your blog?
Probably, through my blog. That's probably the easiest way to do it. Or through my Facebook page.
So go to Owen's YouTube channel by clicking on his blog from his Facebook page.
Right. There you go.
So he'll post a link to his blog from his Facebook page, which then you'll be able to click to his YouTube.
Owen, you are the master of self-promotion.
I don't know how you could make this any more clear, really, to be perfectly honest.
How about you tell us the name of your Facebook page?
It's the Warriors Ethos. So if you just go to Warriors Ethos
Project.
Project.
Yeah, project.
Lead him by the hand.
You can or lead him to water, but you can't make him drink.
Go to warriorsethos.wordpress.com. That's the other
option. Cool. Well, we'll put links or something, or on Facebook. Go to Facebook.
That's outstanding.
That's awesome. This isn't going to get old, is it? Did you do anything else, Owen?
No, that's pretty much all I did. I wrote a blog, but it wasn't about guns, so.
It was about permaculture.
It was about permaculture.
Which, if you beat your swords into plowshares, it sort of fits.
No.
Not really, though. Okay.
No.
Well, I didn't do a whole lot this week, so I'll go next, and then Trevor can wrap us up. I went and shot the Squirrel's Friends Rifleman's Challenge again this week, but it's now this month instead of last month. I know it's like, I just did that, but that was the end of last month, and now it's the beginning of this month. So it's a new challenge. It's a gopher sticking his head out of a hole. And
do that someday.
You should. It was fun. It's 5 shots in 45 seconds from 50 meters, any position as long as it's unsupported. And so I went prone with a sling, and I used my axis because it was, why wouldn't I? I mean, at 50 meters, 22 start to, groups start to open up a little bit. And so I figured that 2-3, I mean, I can shoot fantastic groups benched at 100 meters. So I figured at 50 meters, it was my best bet. So took it out, and it was cold, minus 15 degrees Celsius with 35 kilometer an hour gusts of wind. So it felt even colder. And I did get two target shot. The very first one was, I haven't shot my axis in quite a while. So it was, they were all on the gopher, which was satisfying to me because that meant that had I gone gopher hunting, I would have actually gotten the gopher. But the group size wasn't where I wanted it to be. So I shot a second one.
Oh, wow.
What's that?
I understand it wasn't where you wanted it to be, but, dude, seriously? It was a fantastic group. I mean,
that's the second one that I posted. The first one is a little bit worse.
But still. I'll say this. Once again, the Canadians are way out in the lead.
Well, I shot him. See, I was aiming for his nose, and I put the group right around his mouth because at 50 meters, the 2-3 is going to shoot a little bit low, seeing as it's zeroed for 100. So it was a really nice group. I put two almost in the same hole. One opened it up. One was a little bit to the right, and then I shot his eye out. Perfect, perfect shot in the eye. I would have said bullseye, but it's gopher's eye. It doesn't sound nearly as cool. So that one really opened up the group. So I want to go back when it warms up. Maybe a little bit less wind, and try it again later on this month. But for now, it was fun. And while I was there, I remember last week I was talking about filing down the front sight on my Beretta. And so I did that, and I went back to the range today and test-fired it to make sure that my math was right, and it was. And I was conservative taking off the metal on the front sight, so I had to shave just a little bit more off when I got home, and I think it's going to be bang on now. So,
are you trying to zero that point of input impact?
10 meters.
10, cool.
So 30 feet. And at that distance, I will be with plus or minus an inch out to like 60 feet or 60 meters or something like that. So,
yeah. Is that with a specific ammo you're focused on there?
I just use Winchester bulk ammo.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a 22, so I'm not terribly concerned. It's not a target pistol by any means. It's not a competition pistol. It's just a fun pistol. It's a little, it's almost a pocket pistol. It's basically as small as you can get in Canada, but it does have that stupid barrel sticking out the end. So,
yeah, but it looks so much better now. It's.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This sight is back by the slide where it's supposed to be, and the part that's sticking out, I got threaded, so we can't get suppressors up here. But at least it looks like, it could be James Bond's gun.
Right on.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I did. I had a little bit of fun today and froze my fingers off, but. Got out and did some shooting anyway, so I guess let's move on to Trevor. What did you do with guns? Do you see how I put an emphasis on guns there?
Yeah, so I set up my new bow. my new PSC Bow Madness 34 has been in for about a week, and I finally got the sights and the peep and the string and made it down to the range and sighted it in for 20 and 30 yards. And then Tuesday night, shot a little mini 3D tournament at the club to get ready for this weekend's tournament. Shooting really well. Couldn't be happier with it. And then today, before the show, I set up two IPSC belts, one for my standard gun because the open, I did some changing around and changed the setup for my standard belt and set up a new production belt for my SIG P320. So I set those up and did a little bit of dry fire practice and some mag change with both my standard gun and the SIG here because I was concerned. I'll talk about the mag well or the supposed mag well on the P320 here in a little bit. It turned out to not be as bad as I thought. Also bought another gun or placed another gun on layaway with the Calgary Shooting Center. As you all know, if you don't shop there, you are clearly a communist. this time I went with the FNS Long Slide. I would have preferred the standard size gun, but basically their carry gun or duty pistol is Glock 19 size. And there are none in Canada because there are none with the extended barrel like we can get. So it's either a 4-inch model or a 5-inch model. It should be kind of – it should be all right. Dave Savigny is shooting this gun for Team FN. So with Dave behind the gun, you can expect some industry support, some aftermarket. There's already aftermarket sights, of course, because Dave is known for his sights. Probably be some trigger kits coming out for it. One of the features that I liked about it is, well, I mean, it's the competitor to the Glock 34, to the M&P Pro. It's in that category. It's thanks to Matthew, I know it's on the IPSC list. So it's an IPSC production gun. It's not a duty gun, but lately all the striker fired guns I've been buying have been duty guns or carry guns. But this one still appealed to me enough to get it. I was going to get a SR9, but this is a bit more appealing. So that'll be here in a couple of weeks. And then literally minutes before the show, I tried to assemble my 99% NEA lower. Yeah, there was some cursing going on. Turns out that, and I'm not going to name the dealer because I'll name the dealer depending on how they handle the situation. So the dealer will remain nameless, but recently an online store had a bunch of NEA lowers on sale for $69. And a lot of us ordered multiple lowers, and Muffin and I ordered 4. Filthy ordered 1. One of Filthy's buddies ordered at least 2. Well, they forgot to drill the rear hole at the back of the receiver where your receiver extension screws into the receiver and your receiver plate goes onto the receiver. That hole where your detent goes in to hold the rear takedown pin in place, that hole is completely non-existent on all the receivers that I just mentioned. So there's a problem.
Well, it's not a big deal. Just drill that out yourself.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that, no. I don't have the jigs. I don't have the tools. I don't have the press. I'm not going to mess with it.
No, just take a drill. You just need
to do it by hand. Just eye it. You'll be fine.
That's what I would do.
I think it's a 1/4-inch drill bit. You'll be good.
Well, you know what's good?
Just put that rear plate on and nobody will notice it's not there.
There you go.
Yeah.
Just because the rear pin falls out every time you turn the rifle sideways.
Every time you do a mag change, the pin falls out.
My gun opened up again.
It's kind of a blessing in disguise. I marred the receiver putting in the pin for the bolt catch. I've never done that.
Perfect.
And I slipped with the punch, and there I let the punch get too close to the receiver. I put tape on it, but I don't have one of those cutaway punches. And I've been lucky. Unless I was on borrowed time, and I did mar this one. So, and I mean, I don't care. Like, I'm going to beat the crap out of the gun anyway and throw it around. It's going to get scratched. But this is a matter of pride. I don't like dinging things that I'm working on. So I dinged it, but it's got to go back.
So perfect. You get a mulligan on that one.
Yeah, exactly. So real quickly, I want to take you guys through my initial impressions of my SIG P320. It's been here for about a week now.
Have you shot it yet?
I have not, so that's why initial impressions.
Right,
so,
okay.
Just to give you guys some of the specs on the gun.
Does SIG it feel good in the hand?
SIG is, see what I told you, Paul, didn't I tell you? You just talk right over. SIG is offering this gun in 4 sizes, as opposed to Glock. Glock has the 17, which is the carry, or the duty size, the full size. The 19, which is the compact, and the 26, which is the subcompact. SIG goes with 4 sizes, the full size, which is the P320, the carry, which is the one they actually market to law enforcement to carry in their holster, the subcompact, and then, or the compact, and then the subcompact. So they go full size, carry, compact, and subcompact. So they're getting an extra little ankle biter gun in there. So that's neat. They've got an extra one. And for all of the guns, they offer the grip, the frame, which is molded plastic, and the internals come out, and the grip frame comes in 3 sizes, small, medium, and large. So it's not just a question of replacing the back strap. The entire grip gets changed. They're also going to have like caliber conversion kits for these guns where you can simply change out the barrel and the mags, and you're changing calibers. So it's incredibly modular system that they've come out with. I'm going to compare it to the Glock 17. As far as size is concerned. So the length of this gun is 8 inches, and a Glock 17 is 7.9 inches. I'll do it in millimeters. So to give you an idea how it feels much bigger than the Glock because it's so the slide, the high bore axis on the SIG makes the whole gun look quite a bit larger. But the overall length of the gun, the SIG is 203 millimeters, where the Glock is 202 millimeters. So really, there's not much difference there. Height is 140 millimeters on the SIG, and the Glock is 138. Barrel length, pretty significant, 119 millimeters on the SIG versus 114 on the Glock. Sight radius, which of course is important, 168 on the SIG and 165 on the Glock. But the M&P has a longer sight radius than the Glock does because they place the sights on the slide differently.
Yeah, right at the back.
Yeah. Unloaded, it is pretty heavy, and that's because it has a huge honking slide on it. It's 29.4 ounces. The Glock is 25.6 ounces. So there's a
So the extra weight might... Sorry, the extra weight might help offset the little bit of muzzle flip you might see with that higher bore axis then.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I mean, I think this gun is overbuilt, Matthew, because their intention is to use the same frame for the 40 and the 357 SIG. So it's kind of overkill for 9. Pros, steel sights, night sights, sort of. They're not Trigicon night sights with tritium inserts. They have some kind of glow-in-the-dark thing. And I left it in the safe in the dark for 24 hours and took it out in the dark, and they were still glowing nice and bright. I'm going to leave it in there for a few days and see if they eventually get tired, because, I mean, that's the beauty of tritium. It glows all the time. These are glow-in-the-dark night sights, so if you leave it in your safe and it's locked in there, I mean, my Glock 17 is in my bedroom safe, so it can go, you know, a week without getting taken out to play with, but yeah, when it comes out, the nights are tritium, sights are tritium, so it's not an issue. We'll see if this is an issue. This won't become the bedroom gun. If
you'll just have to leave a flashlight turned on inside your safe to
that'll
keep
work. Yeah, or I'll buy real night sights for it. There's already aftermarket sights on the market for this. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll work then.
Steel guide rod, which is nice. Steel mags, which are nice. The mags are really nice. They're made in Italy. Steel frame, as opposed to the gun itself now, has a steel frame, which is completely removable from the grip. And what's nice about that is the Glock has steel rails embedded into plastic, right? This does not. These are steel frame, so the slide is running on steel rails that are attached to a steel frame. So I think that's a step up.
Yep.
The gun is 100% transferable to left-hand function. The slide lock is already 100% ambidextrous, and the mag release is reversible. So the gun can be switched over within literally seconds from a right-handed user to a left-handed user. So unlike the Glock, where only the mag release is reversible, the slide lock on this is already ambidextrous right out of the box.
That's
takedown,
cool.
Takedown is much easier on the SIG than any other pistol. It's a joke. You remove the mag, lock the slide back, lower the lever 90 degrees, and slide the slide right off. After that, the takedown is essentially the detailed strip of the slide is pretty much identical to a Glock. The striker assembly is different than that on a Glock because one of the safeties is incorporated into the striker assembly. So there's an extra piece there and a spring. You need to be aware of that spring when you take the striker out of the gun. I taught myself how to take this apart without looking at any videos or any manuals, which I think is very important. As all the listeners know, I love to be able to work on my guns, and I like the guns to be simple. The M&P I was not a fan of. I was not a fan of having to drift the pins out with a punch, and I couldn't figure the gun out on my own. I had to go to YouTube to watch some videos. That was not the case with the SIG. The SIG is better quality, better built, but still kept that simplicity and allows the user to work on it himself and change parts out himself. The trigger. Oh, man, the trigger. Now, they say the PPQ, and I've shot one, but I don't really remember the trigger sticking out in my mind. They say the PPQ, however, has the best striker-fired pistol or striker-fired trigger on the market. Well, this has got to be a close second because it's certainly one of the best triggers I've felt, period, out of any gun, let alone a striker-fired gun. And what's neat about it is it has a reset function where you can continually dry-fire the gun and you get a click every time.
So it's like in Hollywood, then?
5 pound click, listen.
Oh,
no, it's about a 5.5 pound click.
So in the movies, whenever the bad guy runs out of ammo and his slide's locked back, but he's still going click, 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 it's just because he's shooting a SIG.
That's what it is, yeah.
Perfect.
So it makes dry fire really...
dry click. Really, not dry firing, but dry clicking.
Yeah. So you don't have to rack the slide. You don't have to cock the hammer like on a single action. You just keep going.
Yeah.
It also has a true Picatinny rail, unlike the Glock that has this one little slot for they want you to buy their light and whatnot. It has a true rail. It has a tactile chamber indicator, just like a Glock, and an SR9. Unlike the MMP, you have to look into this little hole, which is no good if it's darko, right? The takedown lever on this thing acts as a thumb rest, like on my open gun and on my standard gun. My thumb lays right on it along the side of the frame, and it's perfect reference point to ensure that I'm getting a consistent grip every time. My thumb is either on it or it's not. If it's not, I find it. So it just, this gun fits me so well. I've ordered a larger grip just to be sure, because I love how my STI double stack Eagle fits, and this grip is a little bit smaller, but the controls, I can get to all the controls even with my short little hobbit thumbs. They placed the slide lock behind the magazine release. It's right in line with the center of the grip, and I can reach it with my thumb. It's the only gun I've been able to do that without breaking my grip or twisting my grip. My short little hobbit thumb hits it perfectly every time, so I can use it as opposed to gripping and ripping the slide.
Well, even my normal-sized thumbs on a Glock, I have a hard time reaching the slide release.
And it's low profile, because it's not supposed to catch on anything when you draw it or carry it. This one has got a bit of a ridge on it, more like the one that was on your first, the first one you had on your Glock, Matthew, or maybe you still have.
Uh-huh.
So it's a little extended, but it's the location for me.
Yeah.
Cons. High bore axis. Like all SIGs, they say it's lower than like a 226 or a 229. I believe that, but still, it's quite high. Will it affect it while shooting? I'm not sure yet. But so if it doesn't affect it, it's not a con. But looking at it, it makes the gun look big. There's like four stories of slide on there. It is a large full-size gun, which would be great for IPSC and IDPA. But I mean, and this is not the full-size gun is not the one they market for law enforcement to carry. Their carry size, which would be equivalent to like a 19, is the one that they market to law enforcement. The barrel, the slide fit, is not as tight as you would expect. There's quite a gap around the top of the barrel, in between the barrel and the slide. But I suspect that's because it's this same slide will accommodate the 40 caliber barrel. Magwell is non-existent. And Brian and Ken had Adam from MD Carlton, the Canadian importer and distributor for Glocks, or for SIG rather. And Brian had mentioned that I had a concern about the magwell. And he's like, he hasn't shot it yet. He's concerned about the magwell. I don't need to shoot it to know there's no magwell.
So, you can tell that by looking at it.
Yeah, clearly.
And you can practice inserting your mags without bullets in them, and it'll still work.
Yeah. Whoa, seriously?
I know, eh? Nope. No. You Americans didn't know that, did you? Because all you do is load up your guns and... Oh, wait, no. Stereotyping? Sorry, my bad.
America. Anyway, it's pretty much non-existent. However, in doing dry fire practice tonight, because I am awesome, it didn't seem to be an issue, so there's that. The polymer. That's my final comment. The polymer is very different than a Glock or an M&P. It feels hard and brittle, and it looks like it will mar up and get scratched up. And there's already an idiot scratch on it for me not using the takedown lever correctly. And you have to shine the light on it for it to pick up the idiot scratch I put on it. But it has a, I'm not going to say it feels cheap. It doesn't feel cheap, but it certainly does not feel the same. It feels, you know how a Glock, you could actually squeeze the frame, the grip on a Glock, right?
Yep.
Especially mm-hmm. down at the bottom. You can't with this thing. I wonder if it was minus 30 out and you drop this on the pavement, if the grip wouldn't crack. It has that kind of plasticky feel to it. It's comfortable and everything. Doesn't feel cheap, but it feels like it might be on the brittle side.
That's
could be 100% wrong. Just impression of how it
feels. Well, take it outside and drop it.
Nay.
So, first of all, you'd need an ATT to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I could use a hammer, the hammer I use to scratch that air. So anyway, those are my initial impressions. I'm in love with it. It's ready to replace everything, and I haven't even fired it yet. That's how impressed I am with this gun. It's a SIG. I mean, it's a SIG, you know, and SIGs are known, except for the Mosquito, of course. SIGs are known to produce quality products, and this, when you know you've got something substantial in your hands here. So, Paul, you got any experience with the P320 line yet? Have you shot them?
No, I haven't. You know, when they introduced the line last year at SHOT Show, I was really kind of turned off by the gun, just because I felt as if it was a gun that was thrown together. You know, when you look at it, it looks like they took, what is it, a P250?
It is, yeah. And, they say that it's a whole new design, but I've got right. No, it's not.
I mean, you hold the two guns right next to each other, and it's, you know, they fit a little cover over the back where the hammer would go on a P250 and inserted a striker system inside. And, you know, I thought to myself, man, you know, this is just like Glock taking a Glock 17 and making a 22, you know.
Have you thought of it this way, Paul? The SIG P250 was their first polymer gun, right?
Right.
And the 320 is their first polymer striker-fired gun.
Right.
The P250 was them working towards this.
And that could be.
If you look at the hammer design on the P250, it looks nothing like the hammer on any of their other pistols. All their pistols kind of look the same, right?
Yeah.
And then they come out with the 250, which is hammer-fired, but looks nothing like the other hammer-fired guns. And then a year later, oh, wait a second, now it's a striker-fired gun. So I see the P250 as a stepping stone in the evolution on their way to this.
And that could be. And my hope truly is that that's not the end point. The 320 isn't the end point, because I think that the gun could be refined further. You brought up the bore axis, and some people will, you know, say bore axis, schmore axis, and other folks think it's a big deal. I guess my attitude is, all things equal, you know, a gun with a lower bore axis is going to provide for quicker follow-up shots. But the key here is all other things aren't equal. We've got a mass difference. You pointed that out. We've got a trigger difference. You pointed that out. And so, you know, maybe even with the higher bore axis, this gun might be a sweet shooter. And I remember hearing you talk, and I don't remember... maybe it was with Ken and the guys on Modern Rifleman Radio talking about the 320, and I thought to myself, man, I need to get a hold of one of those, and I haven't yet. So we'll see. You know, I'm my interest is peaked, that's for sure.
Well, especially since you've got the option of getting the carry size.
Yeah,
and it's so modular. The gun is going to be available in 9, 40, 357 SIG, and 45 eventually. And each gun comes with a different frame is different. And right now I've got the full size with the full size medium grip. But if I want to, and it would seem silly, but I could put the carry size frame on this gun with the carry size mag, essentially making my own Glock 18.
Absolutely. Yeah, which is exactly what I carry, is a Glock in quotations mark 18. Yeah, I've taken that Glock 17.
This gun.
I chopped off the grip and yeah, that's exactly right. And to be able to do that without having to do, you know, aftermarket modifications.
All factory parts, all warranties.
That's cool stuff right there.
Yeah, and you're going to have a nicer trigger than a Glock. You're going to have a longer sight radius than you have now, but you're going to get some, there's going to be some weight. You're going to have a lot more weight inside your waistband than you do with your Glock 18.
Yeah, but when you load them both up, you know, I mean, how much difference is there really? It's, you know, to me,
less than
with a good belt. Yeah, with a good belt, what's the big deal, you know?
Yep. Get a Safety Solutions Python belt.
There you go.
Love mine. There's a plug, Jason Christensen. Not that you listen. But, all right.
I love it.
Very good.
Called Safety Solutions belt. That was my favorite part right there.
Yep. All right. Well, why don't we move on to talking a little bit about Safety Solutions then, Paul?
Yeah, right on.
So it's Safety Solutions Academy. So you teach people how to shoot and how to live safer lives.
Yeah.
You've told us a little bit about your new product, but you have a different take on situational awareness than a lot of people do. Everybody sort of understands the color code system. And that, I believe it's like white, yellow, red, and black, or something
orange,
like that.
Orange, red,
white,
black.
White, yeah. Why don't you go through them, the traditionals, Paul,
Tell
us yours and kind of compare and contrast.
There's really two systems that are out there that are widely taught, and I have a tendency to think of them as the same, and simply the NRA system is a little bit easier to teach than the Cooper system. But the Cooper system starts out with condition white, where you're inattentive, where you're not paying attention. You know, you're at home, six drinks into the evening, you're asleep.
Or you're texting and walking.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. Yeah. Some people choose to live that out in the real world. And so you just really don't know what's going on around you. And all of us at some point in time spend some time in condition white. That's how we stay alive and stay sane, by getting rest and relaxation. Then there's condition yellow, which would be the idea of being attentive and being aware of what it is that's going on around you. And the NRA starts out with condition white is unaware, and then they call condition yellow aware. Then we move to the next level. Aware just means you know what's going on around you, who's where the exits are, what's happening. But sometimes
you're paying attention, basically.
Yeah, you're just tuned into life. You know what's going on. Sometimes you get that hinky feeling though, like, oh, what's going on up there? That doesn't look right. Then you pop into that situation where you call it alert, or that mode that we would call alert. There's some kind of a potential threat that's out there. And that's what the NRA calls it, is alert. That's condition orange. And then finally, condition red really is where most civilians stop with this system. And that is, there is an imminent threat. This is the alarm stage. And I now need to be acting to do something. Someone is attacking me. That alert that I had go off now tells me, wait a minute, this is a problem. Let's solve this problem. And, you know, those systems have been very widely taught. And it's important to understand that they've probably all been adapted to some degree from military into law enforcement and then trickled down to private sector training, which is the way a lot of things happen. And it makes sense that they do. You know, the primary trainers out there that are in private sector training came from the military background or the law enforcement background or both. And so it makes sense that they bring some of those things. But it's my belief, and a lot of, not necessarily a lot, but several other trainers that are out there, Grant Cunningham being one of them, that maybe that system doesn't really do us justice like we need it to. And there are some problems with it. And that's really, you know, what it is that I teach folks. You know, I talked about the fact I taught a class this past weekend, and we spent, you know, a good chunk of time talking about awareness and what it is and what it really does for us. That's basically the standard idea of awareness. And does that make sense to all you guys? That's how you've been taught it? Anything different that you've learned about awareness?
No,
that's exactly how I learned it. Yeah, it was, you know, white, yellow, orange, red, and then, you know, then you're running kind of thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
The only one
I add into that is one that I kind of pulled out of some of David Grossman's material, which is, I call it condition black.
Yeah.
And that's where your heart's, you know, you're moving 200 miles an hour and your heart's doing 240 beats per second or whatever it is. It's your body's freaking out and you're doing major survival mode.
Yeah, and that's basically when Grossman talks about that. He's talking about a situation where you have lost control of the situation, and now you are in a point where you're acting in a completely unconscious manner, and that's problematic. And we certainly want to try to avoid that.
Yeah.
The military interpretation of black is a little bit different, and you know, we'll just kind of let that go because we're not talking about a military context here. But you know, that really sums up the system as it's taught in general. And my supposition is that we probably do a disservice to folks by teaching them the system. And there's a couple of reasons why. It would be nice to think that we could be aware of everything that's around us. But the fact of the matter is when we think about awareness, everyone has a finite amount of attention. There's X amount of attention that I have, and I'm required all through my life to give attention to lots of different things. I need to know where I'm going. So let's say I'm walking down the street. I need to know, you know, what street's coming up and what turn I need to take next, where I'm headed, what time I need to be there, who I'm meeting, what I'm doing while I'm there, who's around me. You know, is it time to cross the street? Is it not time to cross the street? And who are all these people that are around me? So that's a lot of stuff to pay attention to. So that's number one. We have to divide our attention between many different things. We also have to accept the fact that when we give extra attention to one thing, let's say a potential threat, that means we remove attention. We have to take and transfer attention from other things. And that can be a problem for us, especially because I don't know how, you know, I've never met you guys in person, but I'm guessing you're pretty decent guys. You probably don't spend a lot of time, you know, committing violent acts against other people. Probably not a lot of time committing crimes.
Well, not every day. Anyway.
Not every day.
No.
Just on Tuesdays, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, and Wednesdays.
The fact of the matter is we don't necessarily know or really understand the motivators that criminals use. And so we think we see a threat, and we give attention to that threat, but we could be absolutely incorrect about assigning our attention to that threat. There may be something else out there that is much more problematic for us. People make judgments based on race, skin color, dress, behaviors, and sometimes we can make the right decisions and sometimes we make the wrong decisions. When you give extra attention to someplace where there really isn't a threat, it means you've opened yourself up for additional threats.
It's true. I mean, if you're walking down the street and you see a gangbanger styled individual, whether mm-hmm. or not, you know, they're dressed to their pants or down around their knees, got yeah. big, you know, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. ooh, there's a problem. Well, your attention is now on him. That doesn't mean to say there's no other threats in the area, and he may not even be a threat at all. He just might be somebody who doesn't know how to dress properly.
And he might be the intentional decoy of the real threat that you don't even know is present.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that's an option, too.
Yeah, and so now you put your extra attention on that individual, and that's when somebody steps out of the doorway behind you and clocks you in the back of the head with a club and, you know, takes your wallet and whatever else it is they want to take from you, including your life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we give too much attention to one thing because of our preconceived notions, that can be a problem for us. And then I also argue with folks about the idea that even if we try to pay attention all the time, there's going to be some point in time in life when we're not able to give attention in the real world to the things that we might want to give attention to. And, you know, I commonly talk with folks in class, and depending on who I've got, whether they're people that have a loved one or maybe people that have children, you know, imagine you get that call in the middle of the night. And maybe it is your wife that was driving home from a work conference that was out of town, or maybe your teenage child was out having a good time with friends, and you get that call and you have to go to the hospital. And you get there and the surgeon walks out and kind of has that look on his face or her face and says, "I'm sorry, we did everything we could." And now your life is completely unraveled. And you spend 2 hours working on paperwork, and now it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you got to go home and try and figure out how you're going to move on without the people that are, or the person that's most important in your life. And you step out into the parking garage and you realize, "Oh, I don't even remember where I parked." And you kind of look around dumbfounded, trying to find your keys and stumble towards the car. Now, no matter what you think you practice with condition, you know, purple or whatever color it is, right, it ain't there, because yeah. there's something more important in life that you need to be paying attention to. And the fact of the matter is, the unfortunate fact is that if there is that criminal, that predator that's there when you're in that situation, that's when it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's yeah, they know. Yeah, they know that look.
They know. That's yeah. what they're looking for. That's exactly what they want. And they don't care that you already have had the worst day that you've ever had in your life. They're happy to make it worse and score $50 off you so they can get high again.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And so, you know, we have this idea of we're going to be aware, and therefore I'm going to see the criminal 100 feet away. And as he closes, I'm going to be able to assess and move to a better position. And as he gets to 40 feet, I can put my hand on my firearm or whatever weapon it is that I'm carrying and give a verbal command. And then I can kneel down behind cover and draw my gun as he closes into 30 feet. And, you know, it just doesn't work that way.
That's not how it works in real life. Yeah, no, you're right.
We get ambushed. We get surprised. We get taken when we're not in that state. And people then hear me talk about this, and the jump is, "Oh, so you're saying I shouldn't be aware?" Oh, no.
No.
Not at all.
Didn't say that.
That's the attitude of somebody that just had their ego crushed and now doesn't want to have to change.
Yeah, Trevor, I think that's a lot of it. And I think awareness is an important tool that we have to understand can really serve us well. And it serves as one of the most important and maybe effective avoidance tools that we have. When you walk down the street, drive down the street, move from point A to point B, knowing where you're going, knowing who's around you, knowing what's what and where's where, and you have that confident air about you, the predator looks at that and says, "Yeah, I'm going to wait for somebody that's easy."
Yeah, Mossad was telling us about a study that was done with criminals in jail where they showed them video of people walking down the street.
Yeah.
And they said, "Would you mug this person?" Yeah. Yes. This person? Yes. This person? Mm-hmm. No. This person? No. No. And then afterwards they said, "What was it about the people that you said you would not mug?" And that was what they commented. No, this person carried themselves confidently. Mm-hmm. They didn't have their head in the clouds. They were aware of what was around. Just, or in some cases they said, "I don't know. It was just something about the person that just tells me I would pass on them and go to the next one." And it turns out that the people that they passed on were either people who had training, law enforcement officers, mm-hmm. just, you know, all happened to be people that knew how to carry themselves, and they didn't look like victims. So the people, the criminals being interviewed said, nope, not that one.
That's exactly right. And we'll be having Mass up up. He's coming from Florida. He'll be here in August to do a Mag 40 and a Mag 20. And he puts on a great presentation and definitely talks about awareness in a very realistic manner. And we've also got William April that's coming to Cleveland to talk with us about criminal psychology. He'll be here April 25th and 26th. We're having William April come in April because that only makes sense to do, right? And, it's a great class talking about selection of victims. And sometimes it just simply comes down to the gait. How it is that a person walks puts them in that slot of, yeah, he'll roll easy. No problem. We can take him. So, you know, to kind of sum up my attitude about awareness is we need to be aware as best we can. We need to give our attention to life in general, to the negatives and the positives, so that we can enjoy and live a happy, healthy life and deselect ourselves from crime. And other than that, we have to understand that sometimes we won't be able to be aware. And so we need to be prepared for that worst case scenario, that ambush situation. You know, you take a look at Rob Pincus's book, Counter Ambush Training, which I had a chance to help him edit and get ready to go to presses a couple years ago. It's a great book that talks about how you can train to be ready for that time that you never want to have to face, when you're not able to be on your toes, when you're behind the curve. What do you do?
Yeah, that would be interesting to learn more about that, because you're right. That's something that, you know, a lot of people just don't think about. They're always thinking of the hero situation where they were aware,
right,
and they did,
right,
see everything coming. But, you know, when you don't, what do you do then?
That's right. Know. That's exactly right. And hopefully, if you train properly, if you train with the idea of processing information, understanding how to determine what your threat is, and how it is that the best way to stop your threat is, then you won't have to improvise when that time comes. And that's really the key, is finding that way to be able to lock it down and make it happen like it's supposed to.
Right. Interesting. Very cool.
So there's not really a you don't really have a different system. It's more of a debunking a reliance on the traditional way of teaching awareness.
Yeah, it's what I want people to know is that awareness isn't going to do what it is that you've been told it's going to do. Awareness isn't going to tip you off to the threat that's coming, and then 7 seconds later, you have to fight that threat.
Right. Okay.
And don't you also have a kind of a different approach, though, Paul, where you sort of make yourself known as well when you go into a certain location or into a certain space? You kind of size up the area and then let people know that you know they're there. Haven't I heard you talk about that in some?
Yeah, you might have. You know, I'm not a person that's afraid to interact with other folks. And I mean, that's what humans do, right? We're social animals, we're social creatures. So I'm an eye contact maker. You know, I walk into a room and I'm happy to look around and take note of all kinds of things. And what am I taking note of? I might be taking note of, is there anything crazy going on in here? I mean, are there police over in the corner scuffling with somebody and this is going to turn ugly? And, you know, is there anybody that I might want to make contact with from a business standpoint? You know, I went to my office today, which is a Panera Bread, and, you know, there's a guy there in a Blackwater shirt. Well, I'm going to pay attention to him, you know, because he's in my industry, and you know, maybe I want to talk with the guy. Maybe I want to have a conversation, or who knows what the situation might be. But you just, you know, if you carry yourself with confidence, if you carry yourself in a way that, you know, you're not intimidated by other folks, where normally we shouldn't be, there's no reason to be intimidated by other people, then there's no reason for someone to think that you're an easy target.
Yeah,
but
isn't
that situational awareness? I mean,
to me,
that's what Code Yellow is. To go back to that kind of that traditional system,
sure.
That's it. Code Yellow is not just it's not just awareness. It's that awareness will give you that kind of confidence.
I think Owen Paul is talking about kind of taking that to the next level, not just being aware of what's around you, but interacting with it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair statement, Trevor, to be ready to make eye contact, to nod to someone, to say hello, to let them know that, you know, oh yeah, I'm aware that you're here.
And that's what I do. Yeah, that's my take on it. I think that if I go, and actually I'm going to tell a little personal story that happened on Tuesday night. I was quite proud of my wife. She did something that just blew my socks off. And it wasn't her cooking, trust me. She, to me, I always, and I've given her grief for this, she walks around in a bubble of white. I'm the only person on the planet. Nobody else is around me. I'm unaware of anything except myself. And that's a bit of an exaggeration. And but anyway, we go back and forth on this sometimes, and she makes fun of me because I sit by the exit, or I sit with my back to the wall, and I scan the room and size it up a little bit so I know if there are any potential threats. I try and figure out where, who, or what, right? And she picks on me for this, and I pick on her for being unaware. But the other night, I'm pumping gas, and she went in to pay, and she came out and said, "My tail is tingling." So she watched a movie, Over the Hedge, and there's this nervous turtle who every time something's not right, his tail tingles, and that's her thing now. But she was very serious. She came out and said, "My tail is tingling. There's something not right in there. There's two people that are sticking out like sore thumbs." And in the media right now around here, there's two escaped mental patients from a hospital in Ontario, and they kind of roughly matched the description, but it wasn't what they looked like so much as how they were behaving. So I was so impressed that she was aware enough going in to notice these people sticking out. They didn't fit in. They weren't acting like normal customers acted, and it set her off enough that she left. She came back to the car. Now, that's where it should have stopped. Hindsight being 2020, her and I should have gotten in the car and waited until they left in case they were up to something.
Right.
But what do I do? She says, "I'm not going back in by myself." I said, "No, I'll go in with you." That was dumb. So, but when I did go in, I immediately looked at them and made sure they knew that I knew they were there. So now I'm, you know, and I could be naive here, but I'm thinking, if somebody is about to try and pull something off, one of the things they're going to be concerned about might be witnesses, and can they be identified? So I walked right in. I basically looked right at them and said, "Hey, how you doing?" And I'm, you know, and I walk in and I stand tall. I'm 6 feet and I'm 230 pounds, and I make my presence known, and I look at them and I make eye contact and I smile at them, and I'm standing in line right next to them, and I'm taking notes. So afterwards, I said to my wife, I said, "Did you notice what was in his wallet?" She's like, "What?" I said, "He had a Tim Hortons roll up the rim in there. He paid with a Royal Bank credit or MasterCard. He had some credit cards. And this is what she was wearing. And this is what he was wearing." And I was able to pick out details about him. She was able to pick out details about her. And we were actually pretty good. We could have given an excellent description to the cop. So it turned into an exercise for us, a fun game that we're going to play right now. We're gonna start to play next time. Come out of a store and say, "Okay, what was the guy at the cash wearing?" Just to see if we can pay attention to our surroundings. It's kind of an exercise. But, I was really impressed that she went in and she actually noticed these two people acting sketchy enough that she decided to leave. Of course, me being a dumbass, let's go back inside.
Yeah. Somebody's sketchy. Let's go. Check it out. Come on.
Well, and I love the fact that you're at least willing to admit that, you know. And, you know, you could have been the sketchy dude that just got in his car, like you said, and waited until they departed so that then you could go in and pay. And, you know, I do my absolute best to not step into gas stations in the first place, because those are places where there's a high instance of crime. And so why put myself in that position? I love to pay with a credit card at the pump. I mean, that's just fabulous. Throw the debit card in there and boom, good to go. I never have to step inside. But, you know, that's exactly right. And maybe even awareness to the point where you kind of check things out before you step inside. You know, the more modern convenience stores are all glass in the front. And there's
not
a reason for it.
There's nothing modern in New Brunswick.
Yeah. Well, where we are, the only thing that could have happened in there would have been a breakout of apologies.
Well, there you go. I'm so sorry, eh? Paul, come on, eh? I'm so sorry. Dear. My family was most of them born and raised in Canada.
That doesn't matter. You've already crossed the line. You can't.
Yeah.
Damage is done.
But you find that situation where, you know, you just take a look through the window. Is the clerk there behind the counter where they're supposed to be?
Yeah.
You know, are there,
is there something out of place? Yeah.
Do they have a smile on their face with that customer they're interacting with? You know, are their hands up in front of them? All those kinds of things are what we typically talk about in that idea of yellow.
Yeah.
And my whole idea is you might not catch those things. You might not, for whatever reason, Trevor, you're a smart guy. You went back in anyways. Maybe there were three people in there causing problems, and you don't even know where the third is in the store.
Exactly. And what I sized up the situation before I went in. I tried to identify the vehicles in the parking lot and the amount of people outside and who might be with what vehicle and is there a vehicle running. And everything outside looked normal. But then when we went in, and she asked me not to throw her under the bus too much, but we're standing in line, and I'm trying to pay attention to them, and now she's trying to get my attention to tell me, it's not them. It's not them. So we had a little conversation about being, down low after that. And then as we're walking out, she got ahead of me, and she thought she was going to leave the store before me. So I looked like a male chauvinist pig. I literally grabbed her by the shoulder, stopped her, and pulled her back and stepped in front of her and walked out in front of her. And then so she was right away going, what was that about? We'll have the conversation in the car. Just follow my lead. But I didn't have to step out. I could have stopped her and said, hold on a second. Got her attention and then said, I'm going to step out first, instead of just literally grabbing her by the shoulder and saying, no, you walk three paces behind me. But I wasn't letting her go out first in case there was still something outside. I was going to go out first and then she could retreat back into the store if need be. But I watched the direction that this couple left in, and they didn't leave in any of the cars that I identified. So there was perhaps another car parked behind the building I was completely unaware of.
Sure, or an adjacent parking lot where they're hoping to avoid cameras or all kinds of things.
Yeah, so I broke down a fair amount of my mistakes after the fact, and thankfully there was nothing bad went down, but, I thought I did a good job before going in, and I shouldn't have went in, so it doesn't matter how good of a job. And then I thought I figured out which cars were there and tried to link them up to a car, but they were nowhere to be seen.
Probably not a bicycle this time of year. Right?
Yeah. No, not so much.
Well, the bicycles are good as long as you get the studded tires on them.
Yeah, right on.
So anyway, I kind of take I've taken what I like from the Mossad training and then your take on it, and don't just be aware, but interact with what's around you, and kind of sometimes it's okay to let people know you're there and you know they're there.
Absolutely. And that's just, that's what people that are confident of their surroundings and take command of the situation do. And I look at people that are not likely to be victims. You look at people that have leadership skills, people that have interpersonal skills, people that are going to excel in life no matter what they do. Yeah, be more like that in every part of your life. And that'll help you when it comes to awareness as well.
I think that it's pretty safe to say that if people who have training, just the fact that they have some kind of training helps with that sort of confidence projection.
I think it does.
You look, if you were to take someone that has no training at all whatsoever and someone that has some training, even if it's firearms training, but they don't carry a gun, just the fact they have some kind of training just goes a long ways to giving them, sort of a confidence boost about dealing with situations.
You guys probably understand this more than most gun guys here in the U.S. do, but it's not about the gun.
No,
the gun is simply a tool that we can use in some situations. And depending on your geographical location, it's maybe different situations in one place than in others. But it's simply a tool to be able to handle a situation. It's not the only tool. There's that, 12-ounce Monster can that's in the refrigerator right there in that gas station that can do a pretty darn good job of controlling somebody if you need to by repeatedly, smashing it into their face. It's not quite as cool and sexy, and I don't know of a good holster for Monster cans, but
I still don't want to taste a can without having opened it first.
Yeah, right, Being prepared and knowing that at any moment, whether you have noticed there's a problem or not, you may have to act. That's really the key, and being prepared to do so. And people that have training are more likely not to have to improvise. And that is the big key, is knowing what your responses could be and having a good selection to choose from that's appropriate, and then making that choice quickly and doing it.
Yep. Cool. I like it. Well, that's really good. And for us up here in Canada, it is a little bit different for us. We don't get to carry guns, and so we need to be a little doubly We need to be doubly aware because we need to avoid these situations. We can't get involved in them at all. We can't find ourselves in a situation where we're staring down the barrel of a gun or looking at somebody sharpening a knife in the background menacingly. you know, we need to get out of that situation. We need to get out of Dodge before it even happens. And so this situational awareness thing is really, I think it's a good thing for everybody to kind of have in mind,
sure,
you know, when they're out and about. So.
But, you know, Matt, I'll take a different position than you have. You know, just because you don't have a gun, I'm not sure that that puts you in any bigger disadvantage of being in an armed situation than a lot of folks here. I mean, if I'm caught flat-footed without my hand at least on the gun and I've got a gun pointed at me, I might as well be in a place where I can't carry a gun.
Right.
Because I'm going to have to do something else first before I can access that gun.
Yeah.
And so... is it that big of a difference? You know, again, that gun is just a tool.
Yep, you're right.
And you guys should be able. I mean, you know, don't think I'm saying you don't want to have that right. Absolutely. If you can, definitely, you know, carry that gun. But also understand that you may have to act when you're going through airport security. You may
That's
have
right.
to act when you're in your child's elementary school. You might have to act when you're in the sheriff's department where you can't legally carry a gun in most states. And so be it. So we're going to have to do what we have to do.
Yep. Yeah, good points. Good points all around.
Yeah, definitely stuff to ponder and consider, and another reason why you should go get some training.
Right on.
Very good. All right, well, I think unless there's anything else, we can move on to some listener feedback.
Cool.
Let's do it.
Owen.
First one to Paul.
What's that?
You're the first one to Paul.
He didn't get the show note, so it's I guess it's Owen's turn.
All right. This first email is from Dustin, who says, "Hi, guys. I'm a big fan of your show, but haven't ever had anything to contribute as far as feedback until now. In a previous episode, you guys were talking about the shooting that took place in Oklahoma, where the homeowner went into the house and was confronted with an intruder who he was then forced to kill during a confrontation. And this last episode, you had mentioned that incident again. Since having spoken to Officer Frank about it and him telling you the police respond to these incidents in the same manner as, say, a gun call, but that unfortunately isn't true for much of the country. My partner works for an alarm company here as a phone operator. He is the person who calls the homeowner when their alarms go off due to fire, break and enter, etc. His company deals with clients all across Canada in a number of different cities, and I was quite surprised when he told me that in many cities the police will not respond to an alarm without homeowner or someone else on the designated call list being on site and confirming the alarm as a break-in. One city like that in particular being Edmonton. The police will obviously go if dispatched, but the homeowner becomes responsible for the financial cost of that dispatch if it turns out to be a false alarm. Meaning, if my burglar alarm goes off and I take the action you guys recommended, staying outside and waiting for the police, and not checking my home myself before they are dispatched, when the police show up, if it was just a false alarm, they bill me for dispatch. Every city and province is different, but these bills are in the hundreds of dollars. So every time your house alarm goes off, you have to weigh that risk. Do I go and check to see if my cat knocked something over and set the motion detector off, risk the possibility of someone being in the house, or do I wait patiently for the cops and possibly pay hundreds of dollars if it's a false alarm? Plus then you have the issue of, if you do encounter an intruder and something happens, the cops and everyone else will say, why didn't you wait for the police? But if you wait for them and they show up to find it was a false alarm, they're upset with you for wasting their time. Sorry for the long email. You guys are awesome. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Dustin.
Yep.
You're right.
So it is a risk every time. But what we just talked about tonight actually will factor into that quite a bit. Your whole situational awareness, that, you know, my tail is tingling, you know, thing. Like, you can go into, if you pull up in front of your own house and something's not right, chances are you're going to know. Maybe there's tire tracks that weren't there before. Maybe there's a car there. Maybe your door's broken. You know, those are maybe some identifiers that might help you make that decision. But ultimately,
motion sensor lights have been turned on. A screen is lying in the yard. You know, I don't know what kind of alarm systems you guys have available, but I would imagine they're pretty similar to what we've got.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's a bunch of cans on a rope, and they.
Nice. I like that. I like that a lot. You know, I've got an iPod app, or an iPad app. You know, so when my alarm goes off and the alarm company calls me, I can immediately jump on my iPad and see what it is that's alarmed. So if my motion sensor has gone off in the living room, but I haven't had a sensor from any of the perimeter alarms. I can think back and say, ah, crap, we left those birthday balloons tied to the chair. That was a stupid move. Yeah, cancel that alarm. I'm going to check that one out. Yeah. But if I've got an alarm on the patio door and then the motion sensor, well, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yep.
So take that information and you have to make a good decision. And that's from a guy that's paid money to the sheriff's department for coming to his house.
Right. Yep. No, I mean, every time you gotta make that decision for yourself.
Right.
And it is, you know, sometimes it's a costly decision if you make the wrong one. So, you know, try to err in the caution the side of caution as best you can. But, you know, ultimately you're going to have to make that call. And, you know, we have another email similar to this, I think, or maybe we read it on a previous show, but, you know, the police do only come if they're dispatched, and they don't come just because the alarm goes off. Somebody has to send them, so that call sometimes is up to you, whether or not you want the police to come or not. So,
yeah, and it sucks that it becomes a financial decision because, you know, okay, if I call them and they show up and there's nobody in my house, cripes, that could cost me like $400. If I go in there and there's a dirt bag and I'm between him and the door and he threatens me, well, I'm gonna ventilate him, and now I've just ventilated some guy that if the cops had gone in, I wouldn't be involved in the clean shoot.
Yeah,
you know, like it's such a
it's too bad that they put such a high bill on something, mm-hmm. a high financial cost on something that you know you want to avoid. You don't want to have to call them, and you don't want to have to go in and potentially hurt or kill somebody. So. But at the same time, I mean, especially this day and age, you know, finances are a huge part of people's mm-hmm. life, and it's something that you really have to take care of and be aware of. So, you know, it's a risk every time. So we just, you know, hope everybody makes the right decisions out there and stay safe.
Yeah, because then, I mean, sure, you saved the $400 on the police call, but you got to replace that carpet. I mean, let's face it.
And carpet ain't cheap these days. I just put in a new floor, let me tell you. All right, this next one comes to us from No Nickname Joe. I think that's his nickname, but that's a weird nickname. Hello, Slamfirers. It's the first time I've heard that, actually. It's a good one. Slamfirers. I have been catching up on podcasts and recently listened to the one on the subject on how to warm up equipment that has been out in the cold. One idea that you may try that has worked for me is to use a fan to flow air over the piece of kit that you're warming. Water vapor in the air in contact with the object will lose heat to the cold object. Once the water vapor has cooled below the dew point, it will condense on that cold object. One method to avoid condensation forming on the cold object is to place a fan to keep the air moving over the cold object. If the water vapor is moving away from the cold object's surface before it cools, condensation will not occur. Moving the air will bring fresh, moist air over the object, but it will move along before it cools enough to condense on the object. I really want to say object again. The moving air will warm the object faster. One point of caution is not to use anything that heats the air. You only want to use a device that moves the air. Something like a heat gun runs the risk of overwarming the cold object, which could do things like damage the surface finish or heat an optic too quickly. Heating something too quickly can cause stress to the object when the surface expands in response to the heat, but the core of the object remains cold. If you use a fan, then you won't warm the object above the ambient room temperature and should avoid a problem with expansion. Let me know what you think. The technique has worked for me here in high-altitude Alberta where the humidity in winter is typically low, but I don't have anything of ridiculously large value at risk either. You may want to try this out on something other than a very expensive camera to see if it works where you live. Hug someone shooting, No Nickname Joe, from Alberta. So that's actually a really good point, and since this email actually did come in 2 weeks ago, I have actually used this technique a few times on different things that I've had out in the truck that were very cold, and when I brought them in, they immediately began to sweat. They didn't really start to sweat, but you know what I mean by that. And so I put them in front of a fan, and it worked very well. So I think for objects that won't be damaged by water moisture, as in like electronics, if you bring a camera in from the cold and water starts to form on the circuit board, you can't blow a fan over that circuit board because it's inside of the camera case. But for things like rifles, sealed objects like scopes, things like that, I think that's a good technique. So for stuff like that, it worked for me anyway. So thank you for the email, Joe, and hopefully some other listeners will be able to take advantage of it as well. Nothing? No other comments?
Nothing, no.
God,
it works. It works so great.
Oh, what were you going to say, Trevor?
I was answering a Facebook question about guns. Sorry. So put a fan on your stuff. Is that what I?
That's basically it. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks for listening, Trevor.
If you got a rifle in a Pelican case, leave it in your Pelican case.
Yep. And that's what we had discussed previously.
Yeah.
Just leaving it in the case and letting the condensation form on the case as opposed to on the expensive object. See, I wanted to say object again. So
objectively.
Objectively, yes. I object. Trevor, why don't you object and read this next email from Jesse?
Well, it's to Owen, so let Owen take the first part.
Well,
you read it. I'll respond. How's that?
All right.
Yeah.
So, hey, Owen, how's the new diet working out? You're on a diet? Wait, I mean mono. Seriously, I feel for you, man. I had mono a couple of years ago and didn't eat for 2 weeks. Oh, man, I need me some mono.
Go kiss Owen.
I ended up losing 38 pounds in that time as a result. Wow. Unfortunately, it didn't stay off. Haha. I ended up being extremely exhausted for about 3 months afterwards. Wow. Wishing you a speedy recovery and just want to say kudos for still having the energy to rub it in. Rub it in. For still having the energy to record the show. Paul, I feel a nap coming on and I cancel. Owen records with mono.
Sorry, guys. I dozed off. I apologize.
But at least you stayed. You napped through the show.
Right.
It says, be careful who you kiss in the future, Owen. Yeah. To Trevor and Matt. In case Owen doesn't make it, start deciding who gets his guns. That could his wife. I mean, shoots better than Matthew. That could be a new episode, or you could just make him some squirrel soup. But what fun is that? Thanks for the show, guys. Always my favorite podcast. Jesse from Manitoba. Thanks, Jesse.
Yes, thank you. And
I think I'm gonna pull through, Jesse. So sorry, guys.
I want the little AR. I'm just saying that little short barrel. That's the one I want.
Oh, what would I want? Oh, I want his M305.
I also want the Savage 24.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Really? I want the M305 and the GSG.
You can have it.
I can have it.
It was easy. You didn't even have to kill him or nothing.
Wow, beauty.
Oh, why would you want that? I guess because it's an over under. But
I love Savage 24s. They're one of my favorite guns.
Oh, the trigger on this is brutal.
I could fix it.
I'm just saying, if you left it to me, I'd sell it.
Yeah, well, I know.
Well, he'd probably sell it to me, though, so it'd be
sell
okay.
It
so,
if it
so if you want Trevor to get some extra money from me, give him the gun, and I'll buy it from him.
If it didn't have sentimental value, I probably would have sold it before now, because I'd never use it. But it was my grandfather's rifle, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Trevor. From Uncle Biscuit.
I just read one.
Did?
Yeah.
Is it my turn? No, it's Owen's turn.
I think it's my turn.
Yeah, it's Owen's turn. That's right. Sorry, Owen.
Not my turn?
Oh, yeah, you read it. Wait, I'll send you a text with the...
Pause.
Yeah.
No, that's awareness.
Okay, so Uncle Biscuit says, hi, guys. I was listening to old episodes of Modern Rifleman and heard Trevor say that he was cross-eyed dominant.
Just cross-eyed, I believe, is what it is.
Yes. I was gonna make a joke about dominance, but never mind. I have a friend that I took out shooting
Get
for the first time. that is as well, and he was trying to figure out how he was supposed to shoot. Do you have any advice or techniques to get him started? He's right-handed and left-eye dominant. I also want to say thanks to you guys for putting out such an entertaining show every week. It makes work on Fridays that much better.
It was funny because Trevor actually did send him some advice, and then when he replied to this part too, and Trevor said, yeah, try drinking more.
That's how I get through Fridays. And Fridays. Wednesdays are rough too. Scotch on Thursdays.
So you did actually answer Uncle Biscuit, but how about...
I did, but I'll sum it up real quick.
Yeah, for the people who are interested.
Yeah, if it's a long gun with fixed sights, I would recommend closing the dominant eye, because otherwise you can tell when somebody's cross-eyed dominant and they're trying to shoot a rifle and no one recognizes the problem. Their head is far back on the stock. They're trying to lean over. They're subconsciously trying to aim through their left eye without even realizing they're doing it. So any instructor who recognizes anything about form or technique will know that they're all twisted up and mangled. So close the left eye, get the proper cheek weld, and shoot with just the right eye in the beginning. A red dot on a long rifle is great. because you can just get a proper cheek weld and shoot with both eyes open. The eye dominance won't be a factor. With a handgun, same thing. Learn to shoot first with your left eye closed. You could try with both eyes open. Keep the head straight. Keep the stance and the form correct and bring the handgun slightly over the left side of center and line the handgun up under their left eye. Some people have a hard time to do that and get down grip, trigger pull, sight alignment, stance. So if that's the case, take the eye out of the equation. I mean, I'm a fairly competent pistol shooter, and I shot for the first 3 years with my left eye closed. I made the transition over from archery and rifle shooting. I grew up learning to shoot with my left eye closed. I since taught myself to shoot with both eyes open with a handgun, which is so much better. And I just simply stuck the pistol under I knew enough, my stance and my form and technique were ingrained enough that I was able to slide the gun over underneath my left eye, as opposed to twisting my head into some awkward position. So I would recommend just learn to do it all with the left eye closed. And then when the fundamentals or basics are down, start to open up that left eye and move the gun under. Paul, you've got more teaching experience than I do. How do you approach this when you get a new shooter in your class that's shooting a handgun cross-eye dominant?
I've got the same reality experience that you do, Trevor. You know, I'm a right-handed shooter, then I'm left-eye dominant. And with a pistol, at this point in time, it's just completely irrelevant until I get into precision sighted fire. And that's how I treat it with most students as well. Until we really need to use the sights, so we're talking, you know, man-sized targets beyond 5 yards. Both eyes open, just shoot. It's going to sort itself out, no problem. When you have to start using the sights, then we have to sort that out. And absolutely, just move the gun under that left eye. You know, you can do the funny stuff with the tape over the non-dominant eye, you know, but
that's hard to do in a gunfight. Hold on just a quick sec.
Firearms instructor, yeah. You know, unless you're going to wear glasses around all the time that, you know, obscure the non-dominant eye, that's just silliness.
Yeah. I see some IPSC shooters doing it too. And I'm like, no, not getting into that game.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're shooting for defensive purposes, then you need to work to sort that out. And so just close whatever eye you're not going to use at the time. And, you know, if you're going to shoot left eye dominant, great, close the right eye. If you're going to shoot right eye dominant, great, close the left eye. And just work through it. It's just a matter of closing that eye. And the reality is, if you want to use the sights the way that they're traditionally taught by having that hard front sight focus, most people, regardless of dominance, should probably close one eye anyways. It's pretty hard to keep both eyes open and actually get a good sight picture. So when it comes to real precision shooting, even with a handgun, I'd argue that maybe that eye should be closed regardless of dominance. And I know that's different than what a lot of people say.
Well, I mean, I agree with some of what you said and some parts I don't agree with. Even like some of the top IPSC shooters in the world, they see their front sight, whether it's a 3 yard target or a 30 yard target. But for those precise shots, I agree 100% to eliminate seeing, because I, with both eyes open, I see two sets of sights, but I know which one I should be looking at.
Yeah.
But if you close one eye, then you're going to get a cleaner sight picture with less distraction. So when I want to make a precise shot, I do close one eye. Now, I used to close my left eye and aim with my right eye, but since I switched to shooting with both eyes open and I'm now lining the pistol up under my left eye, I will actually, right eye. If I have to make it, if I have to make a precise shot, I'm closing my right eye and using my left eye because it is the dominant eye and it works out.
That all makes sense, Trevor, exactly what you said. Now, one thing I'll say is we have to be careful when we say, you know, the top IPSC shooters in the world see that front sight no matter what. They're not experiencing that life-threatening stress that somebody in a fight
it's a
is
stress,
experiencing.
But it's not.
It's not the same. And so we have to be careful, and we can debate all day long about whether or not you're going to see the sights in a gunfight. And I don't have an answer for you. I can tell you what I think the body's going to do, and I'll train you in a certain way so you're ready to deal with it however you need to. So
And Massad has a happy medium, too, and I think all smart instructors do.
Yeah.
Massad calls it the flashlight pitcher sort of kind of thing where, you know, it's a go-between point shooting and seeing your sights.
Sure. Daniel Shaw, you know, talks about meat over metal. Excuse me, metal over meat. Get it the other way around. Metal over meat. You know, and that's something that's been around for years, and that's definitely one of the possibilities. And basically all we're doing is what Lou Kyoto from California Highway Patrol taught in his target focus shooting program is we're simply going to put the gun parallel with and into our line of sight and then press the trigger without disturbing the gun. And guess where the bullets are going to go?
In the direction of where it was pointed
last.
There you
go. Yeah. Wherever you're looking.
Now, as I understand it, this is advice that you would give to somebody who has... an adult, say, somebody who has had a little bit of firearms experience maybe and has already determined that he is definitely right-handed. But teaching a youngster to shoot who is right-handed, left-eye dominant, I've heard many people say that it might be better just to teach that person, if they have no firearms experience whatsoever at all yet anyway, just teach them to shoot left-handed.
You go first, Trevor. What do you say?
I say yes. I know certainly... because then you can become a shooter with both eyes open much quicker. And if you try this at a young age, it will be less of a disruption to you because you don't have any habits that need to be broken. Certainly in archery, I mean, I'm biased there. I've got an archery coaching background. And if you can just go with the dominant eye instead of the dominant hand, then you'll shoot with both eyes open. And, you know, ideally we always want to have both eyes open for peripheral vision and whatnot. So... if you could train somebody to shoot on the dominant eye instead of the dominant hand, and they're getting it, I would try it. There's no harm in trying it, especially with a younger person.
I'd say yes and no. If we're talking about long guns, yeah, it's a challenge, especially with shotguns where the dominant eye is the rear sight.
Yeah,
and think about
exactly.
That. Your rear sight is your dominant eye with the shotgun. Yeah, put that shotgun on the left shoulder and go to town. If we're talking about handguns, though, the solution is so simple. Just move the gun over.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
So we don't need – let's take advantage of both. Now we can shoot with our dominant eye and our dominant hand. That's the way to go with the handgun.
Yeah, because you need the eye-hand coordination for manipulating the handgun and changing magazines.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, that's a – detailed answer, one that was a little bit longer than I thought it was going to be, but it was good. I enjoyed it. Who's up?
You.
Okay, from Dave. Hello, Owen, Trevor, and Matthew. As an avid listener to your show, I was kind of half expecting you guys in episode 92 to discuss the recent shooting of RCMP officer David Wynn in St. Albert, Alberta, a couple of weeks ago. In some ways, this incident was eerily reminiscent of the shooting of the four Mounties in Mayerthorpe by the guy that shot them. I'm not going to say his name again. Both of these killers had weapons illegally, had lengthy criminal records. They also both committed these ambushes unexpectedly by themselves. If it is possible, I'd like to hear your take on this whole issue and hopefully get the NFA guy back on your show to talk about all subjects related to incidents like this. Thank you. From Dave in St. Albert, Alberta. So, that is something that we could probably talk to Officer Frank about maybe next time he's on. And the NFA guy, also known as...
Sean Bevins.
So,
I don't know that we're going to get Officer Frank back on.
Oh, okay.
That may have come to an end. He's waiting to get word. Apparently, we could be construed as media.
Oh.
And whether he's off duty or not, they're not supposed to speak to the media.
Oh, gotcha. So
they have people for that. Just like as a teacher, I'm not allowed to make a comment in the media about anything. We have a person for that.
Interesting.
So he's waiting to get official word.
All right. Well, hopefully we're not media then, because I'd like to have him back on.
Yeah, we are when we want to be, and we're not when we're, you know, it depends.
Look,
on
the best of both worlds.
Exactly. But no, we didn't talk about it, and we have no real good excuse for not talking about it. It's not that we didn't want to talk about it. We just had
other things to talk about, you know, that's all.
That were pre-planned.
Yep.
And now it's kind of past.
But you're right, but it
real
is.
Real quick, I mean, both of these guys should have been off the street. That's my opinion. They were both known, and they were both not supposed to have firearms. They would be what you would call felons, Paul, and they had their firearm rights taken away.
Well, not only that, they were both demonstrated a propensity... capacity.
They did not play well with others.
Yeah, they should not have been on the street. They should have been in jail, both of them. And so that's a sort of a breakdown of our legal system, if you ask me. And it's sad that people had to lose their lives to learn this lesson. But, you know, I'm not even convinced the lesson's learned yet.
No, and then the punk shot himself.
Yeah, like, these guys, they don't need to be out of jail ever. If they have this tendency towards violence, they are not safe in public. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm all for him shooting himself. I just wish he had done it before he took some members with him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay.
So frustrating.
It is. Yeah. Yep. All right. Yeah, so from... Sorry, go ahead, Trev.
I was just going to say to Paul, it's especially sensitive up here because we don't have any rights protected by a Second Amendment. So right. When this happens, it gives the antis... well, they think it gives them leverage anyway, but it certainly gains sympathy for their arguments, right? It doesn't help our side at all.
I don't know all the details about the situation because here, you know, we've got so much more violence, unfortunately, than you folks do. Our violence tends to overwhelm my news feed compared to, you know, what's going on with the amount of police up there. And obviously it's a tragedy and all those kinds of things. But the fact of the matter is that if people look at it critically, it's actually good, solid evidence that everybody needs to have the right to self-defense. That's a God-given right to all mankind. You know, we here in the U.S. talk about it as being protected by our Constitution, but we don't think of it as something that's just for us. It's for everybody. And unfortunately, there are some governments that have taken that away, and it shouldn't be that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Amen.
I concur 100%. All right, this next one's from Spencer then, and I think, is it Owen's
turn?
You
put this in. You actually put this in?
Yeah.
You put this in.
Yeah. I, you know what? You should read it is what you should do. But no, we should get Owen to read it to you because it's way more appropriate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so just this one by
Spencer.
Spencer, yeah. So Spencer says, have you guys seen this? Pretty impressive trick shooting with a bow.
Trevor loved it. He watched it about 6 times in a row. It's his favorite. He can't get enough of this link. You guys should send it to him more.
Lars Larson is an android.
So he goes on to say, also, do y'all get the Canik firearms in Canada?
Is it Canik?
Canik?
Canik firearms.
I've never even heard of it.
Never heard of her.
Trevor's comment about looking for a double action, single action gun, but buying another striker fired one reminded me of the Canik 55 TP-91. That sounds like something out of Star Wars.
I think it's TP-9.
Oh, sorry. Oh yeah, TP-9. And then there's no period. I picked up a on sale around Christmas.
Doesn't need to be a period.
No, I guess there doesn't. It looked like 91 to me. Okay.
It does kind of look like 91. You're right.
It's a good thing there's a space between the 9 and the 1, or well, it would be 91. Or between the 9 and the I.
Who are we going to blame here, Owen or Spencer?
Not
blame
Spencer.
Blame me, yeah. Even though it only costs $250, he says. I've taken it out a few times now, and it's actually a pretty impressive gun. The quality and workmanship is as good as any major manufacturer pistol. The ergonomics aren't bad either. Better than a Glock, but not as good as an M&P. Okay. But the thing that really stands out, though, to me, is that while this is a striker-fired pistol, it has a double-action, single-action trigger. Okay, I'm not sure how that works.
Well, the sear simply will either cock the striker all the way back and release it, or cocking it by racking the slide will allow the sear to hold that striker in the rearward position, where you only need a small amount of, kind of like a Glock,
guess,
it's held back quite a ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. Anyway. I always think of striker-fired guns as having a single trigger pull, but as this gun shows, there's no reason that has to be the case. A double-action, single-action system can work with a striker as easily as with a hammer. The trigger is kind of strange, though. You can pull it back about halfway, and it will click into single-action mode. You can actually take your trigger off and leave it pre-cocked there, or put it back into double-action mode using the decocker on the slide, or keep pulling and fire the gun. It's hard to describe and a little weird, but actually works pretty well once you know what to expect. As usual, great show, and I'm glad you lost the time restrictions. At least now we get the outtakes back.
Awesome. I will look into that, but my first impression is... But I'll look into it. Well, we need to say goodbye to our guest.
Yeah, speaking of time restrictions, we're out of time.
Doc will have our legs broken if we don't let his host go.
Right. You'll have to have enough crown for him to shower in, which is a lot more than a bath, and that's crazy.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it would be awesome if any of you guys or all of you guys could make it up for our charity shoot. We do an annual charity shoot every year, and this year it's being invaded by other podcasters from both sides of the border. It's turning into an international event.
Well, give me dates. What are the dates?
June 27th. And Tommy Nelson will be up just a couple. June 27th, the event. Tom Nelson's in town the next day.
Tommy's in on the 28th. Tommy was in Utah when I taught a critical defensive handgun class a year ago. Tommy's a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good Tommy. Yeah. All right. I'll take a look at the calendar of the 27th. That would be awesome.
That would be fantastic.
Come up there. And I've not traveled in that part of the country. And again, my family has heritage there, so it makes some sense.
Yes, it does.
Blast, yeah. More than welcome.
Yep. And you'd be in double digits positive then. So that
It'll be positive for sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and almost triple digits in Fahrenheit.
Ooh.
But we don't get triple digits in Celsius or else we all just die.
dust.
Yeah, I'll talk to you more about it on Facebook, Paul.
Right on, Trevor. That's awesome. Guys, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I hope that that was a great episode and I hope folks enjoyed it.
We really enjoyed having you on, and we wish you good luck with the Plan B. And I'll make sure a link gets put up in these show notes on this episode, so listeners can go check that out.
I appreciate that, Matt. That's awesome.
Well, and also, and I meant to get this out earlier, we should talk about a class sometime as well.
Oh, gosh, I'd love to come up and talk to you guys. And I think it would make a lot of sense to talk about a home defense with handgun class. Yep. Since that really fits in the niche of what you guys up in Canada can do. So let's talk about that. Maybe we can tie that in with, you know, the week before or the week after the 27th.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see if we can work something out.
Right on, guys. Thanks so much for your time.
No worries. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
The nerve of that guy to leave early.
I know, eh? You imagine?
So funny.
We were just about to wrap up, too.
We did a show with him, and I left early. The show that I was on, I had to leave probably to come on this show or something. And the second I left, they started tossing me under the bus. And all you heard Paul say was, stay until the end. Stay until the end. Stay until the end.
Yep. Not this time. He didn't stay to the end, so he's got to go under the bus now.
Yeah, all of a sudden, he's wondering why he's backwards. Next email's from Anonymous.
Actually, I think we're going to go to wrap up. And
oh, that far. Wow, yeah. That far gone. All right, Anonymous. We don't know
Anonymous, we're going to get to you next week as well as Curtis and really Manny. Long. So you guys send some longer emails, and we're going to cover them next week. So
Winnipeg, Manny?
Yeah, from Winterpeg. And he wants to talk ARs, so that's cool. That'll be fun to listen to. So make sure you guys all tune in for that next week, and we'll talk ARs a little bit. But it is that time of the show where we basically say goodbye. So
goodbye.
Goodbye. No, a little bit more than that. I'm actually stalling just a little bit because I'm checking, what's that thing, iTunes for a new rating to see if we have any new ones because that'd be cool, right? So we have no new reviews. Okay. So, no new iTunes reviews, but if you'd like to leave one, you certainly could, and maybe next week I'll read it if it's there. So, that would be neat. I guess we can move on to some shout-outs then. It looks like Trevor has some.
I do. Again, to my buddy Jeff Reese at the Calgary Shooting Center. If you don't shop there, you're a communist. George Hatch, he bought his lower parts kit there. He said, I'm not a communist. I shopped at the Calgary Shooting Center. Did I tell the true story about the computer, the internet guy got off the phone, looked at Jeff and said, that customer just told me that he was told if he didn't shop here, he was a communist?
That's funny.
True story. So Jeff Reese for helping me with my next gun purchase. He's the one that's taking care of the deal for my FN. So that's awesome. Thank you very much. And Ross Laurie. I don't remember why I put Ross in here. I guess because my
Snyder because Ross is cool, basically.
Yeah. Well, I guess. Yeah. So, and Jeff deserves a shout out for his two squirrels targets as well. I can't remember why Ross. I don't know. Maybe it was because of the M9 was supposed to be here today, but it was supposed to be here yesterday, but it's not going to be here till tomorrow.
Wow, so, that's too bad.
And for Muffin for bringing me a lawyer with not all the right amount of holes drilled in it.
Remember bringing you a lawyer without the right amount of holes?
Yeah. Not a lawyer, just a... Well, there's jokes there. No, we're going to carry on.
Anyway, I hope it gets straightened out and he doesn't have to drive to Ontario to straighten it out.
Yeah, hopefully that's the case because I wouldn't want him to have to go there because he would hurt people.
Yeah.
All right, so... Thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing. Please check us out on the Crusader Podcast Network.
Check us out.
Just check us out. It's crusaderpodcast.com. You need, if you haven't, to go join both of our National Firearms Associations, the CSSA and the NFA. It is time to start ramping up, and we need to make sure that we got lots of numbers. So send them your name, your number, and your credit card number, and get signed up today. It's very important. Go check us out on Gun... Sorry?
And then print out a petition and go coerce all your friends to sign it.
That is also a really good thing to remind people of. You're right. If you haven't downloaded and printed off your petition yet, and remember, it needs to be printed on legal-sized paper, so run to Staples, grab some legal-sized paper, or just have Staples print it off for you, and then get them to sign it while you're there.
True.
Why not? But yeah, get these petitions signed, guys. The NFA wants them soon. What's the deadline for them? March something, right? So that's like 15th. A little over a month away, month and a half away, so yep, get on that. Check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. We got our own little forum over there. So we you know, talk about the show and stuff. So go check us out there. It's always nice to have some feedback in that area. And also go like us on Facebook. 1,143 likes so far. So we're getting up there. It's you guys, and our Facebook page is becoming more and more active all the time. There's more links and messages and comments and stuff being posted there all the time. So go check it out. It's a great way to interact with us, and we love interacting with you guys. I don't like interacting with these two guys, but with you, the listener, is fantastic. Wait, what? Did I say that out loud? Just kidding.
That's right. We already know it, so you might as well say it.
I kid. All right. Well, gentlemen, it's been a great show, and we do want to just thank Paul once again for joining us and taking part in the mayhem.
Mm-hmm. I really hope that it won't be this summer, obviously, because we're already booked with two classes, but maybe next year we can do a class with Tommy and a class with him, or class with, maybe get him and Shaw up at the same time. Who knows?
But, sure. We could figure something out, but it would be, yeah. That'd be a really good idea to do a home defense course. You know, that's a great idea.
We can practice in my house.
We could.
Wait, what? No.
Just everybody get an ATT to Trevor's house. Get Trevor, just put up berms all the way around. Yeah. Make it a 360 shoot house.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm in airsoft.
Hand out earplugs.
We can actually use the house at the range.
Oh, we could.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yep, we could. That would be fantastic.
Yep.
Cool. Well, anyway, that was fun. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Bye for now.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Yeah, we could do that. Means we gotta start again. All right, we'll try this again.
Matthew hates me so much right now, Paul. You have no idea.
You don't even understand.
Matthew is the king of editing. He loves to edit.
Bunch of jerks. Just Trevor, basically. Just Trevor.
This is the second take. We only get two takes, guys.
That's it. After that, we get three.
We cancel the show.
Yeah, we cancel the show. That's it. We're done. Thanks for trying to join us, Paul, but now we're done. crap. All right, here we go. Take two. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the show for... What show is it? It's freaking stupid. Shut up, jerks.
First he doesn't introduce the guest, and then he doesn't say what show he's on.
Next, I'm not going to introduce you, Trevor.
Didn't see that coming.
All right, take three.